From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thanks so much. We got a great show for you today. We really do. We're going to talk some baseball with ESPN's Buster Olney, but first, last week, we talked about the advantages of the old-fashioned postal service, which we refer to, in a loving way, as, quote, snail mail. Well, as it turns out, postal workers really don't like that term. In fact, we got an email, one of many, from a listener named Mailman Mike. And Mailman Mike says, quote, please be careful not to use such language in the future, and remember, we know where you live. Well, you don't know where we live, but you know our phone number. Give us a call. It's 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Neil Gussman from Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Hey, Neil, how are you?
Great, and you?
I am not bad. Lancaster, that's Amish country, right?
It is.
It is, and what do you do there?
I actually work at a museum and library in Philadelphia. I take the train back and forth.
I see. You're commuting. Well, what kind of museum is it?
It's a museum of the history of chemistry, all the way back to alchemy.
Wow.
A museum about the history of chemistry.
Yes.
Does it have my D in it?
Neil, welcome to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to the man behind everything you might find at Baudette.com, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Neil. How are you?
Great.
Also, a comedian performing at the Fargo Theater in Fargo, North Dakota on May 8th. Her CD, I Heart Jokes, is out now for those who can't get to Fargo. Paula Poundstone.
Hi, Paula.
Hey, Neil.
And finally, as a humorist and the author most recently of Driving Like Crazy, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke.
Hello, P.J.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
So, Neil, welcome to the show. You're, of course, going to play Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle, right here, is going to read you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you win our prize, Carl's voice, and your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Ready to go.
All right, here is your first quote.
I hate Iceland. I hate Iceland.
That was a drunk Scottish guy, as you can tell, who stumbled into a British TV segment being filmed at an airport. Why did this stranded traveler express his hate for Iceland?
Because of the volcanic eruption in Iceland that grounded him.
Exactly right. The volcano in Iceland. The
now spell it.
Yeah, no, just say it.
We tried. We tried earlier this week. We all practiced, and instead we're just going to call it the volcano. I think the lesson of the past week, though, is do not screw with Iceland. I mean, they're tiny, they're underpopulated, and since their financial crisis, they're surviving on home-caught sardines and lichen. But, as they proved this week, they can mess you up.
I've really been promoting the idea that the Iceland people have done this on purpose.
How so?
I don't know. I just feel that no one has ever really hated Iceland before.
We wanted to get into that.
And well, it's negative attention, and I think they're going to find themselves isolated.
Yeah. Well,
there's a lot of have you noticed there's a lot of anti-Icelandic sentiment sweeping this country? We now have a iced tea party movement. They're burning Bjork albums. They're referring to ice cream as freedom cream. Neil, here is your next quote.
I would look pretty good in one of those black robes. I taught American history, and we studied the Constitution of the United States. The rest should be on Google.
That was Beth Beggs of the Lake Country Sun newspaper from Texas saying why she would be the ideal person to fill what vacant post, or soon to be vacant post.
The vacancy on the Supreme Court.
Exactly right. The Supreme Court Justice. This week, the president convened a meeting at the White House with senior Republican and Democratic senators to discuss his possible pick to replace Justice Stevens. It went like this. The president says, well, I was thinking of picking, and the Republicans interrupt. They say, we hate her. And the president says, what makes you think it's a woman? And the Republicans say, okay, we hate him. We think the president, by the way, I mean, they're going to get him no matter what he does. So we think the president should nominate Mitch McConnell, just so we can watch Mitch McConnell run to the Senate floor and denounce Mitch McConnell as being out of touch with the American mainstream.
I did my sixth grade specialty report on the Supreme Court.
Did you?
Yes. And I'm not saying that qualifies me. But you know what? Here's what I knew at the end of my work, that there were 9 people on the Supreme Court.
Wow. What month of your research did you figure that out in?
Towards the end.
Towards the end. Here, Neil, is your last quote.
For anyone who has ever lost a cell phone, remember this. It could be worse.
That was the New York Times remarking on somebody who'd left the prototype for the next what in a Northern California bar.
The Apple Corporation lost a prototype iPhone.
Yes, they did. The new iPhone. Hey, we've all been there. Everybody's gotten drunk and lost their phone. But it is one thing to misplace your Hello Kitty-themed Nokia, and quite another to lose the top-secret prototype for the next iPhone. But that's what happened. Somebody found the misplaced gadget in a bar, and almost immediately pictures of it were all over the Internet. Some said it was a hoax, cleverly engineered by Apple to generate buzz. The idea is that they even went so far to sell the scam as actually beheading the employee who left it in the bar.
I think it was a scam. You know?
You do?
Yeah, because nobody just does anything straightforward anymore.
But if you were really trolling for geeks, is a bar where you leave the iPhone? I mean, wouldn't you leave it at the World of Warcraft store?
Exactly. I guess so.
So that.
Yeah, I think it was because we're talking about it.
Yeah. I leaned forward into my screen when I saw the picture of it. Oh, look at there. I'm an Apple early adopter, I'll admit. I pre-ordered my iPad. It still hasn't come, by the way. That may also be a scam. I've not seen an iPad in nature yet. As far as I know, they're all just an illusion like
right.
Everything else.
I still can't even say that name. No.
Carl, how did Neil do in our quiz?
Neil was perfect, Peter. Neil, you had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done, Neil. Congratulations.
Thanks for playing.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, Sue Loudon is running against Harry Reid for Senate in Nevada, or she wants to, if she gets the Republican nomination. And, of course, she wants to repeal health care reform. She has another solution for the national health care problem. She says people can lower their medical bills by doing what?
Well, let's see. They can. I haven't got any idea. They can stop. They can stop getting sick so much for one thing.
That's what's wrong with you people.
Yeah. Can I have a hint?
Well, it'll be the first case of trading a chicken for a chickenpox cure.
Oh, they can barter.
Exactly. Bartering with your doctor is what you suggest. She made the suggestion last week that people should barter with their doctors.
It's hard enough
services.
To get an appointment.
I know.
And they already want your firstborn son.
Well, when she said it, everybody can barter, everybody thought she meant bargain or haggle. You know, like doctor says, well, it'll be $10,000 to reattach your arm. And you say, can I get a cheaper model? Do you have anything in a paw, maybe? But no, this week, Ms. Loudon said yes, she meant barter. She said, quote, in the olden days, our grandparents, they would bring a chicken to the doctor, unquote. The idea was very popular.
How old is she?
She's...
Yeah.
Of moderate age.
Yeah.
The idea was very popular. Republicans all over Nevada began donating to her campaign. She got 4 cows, 18 plates of homemade brownies, and a nice macrame potholder.
Well, I'm a stand-up comic, and the idea that I'm going to go into the doctor in tremendous pain and offer jokes... you know, or my kid's, you know, falling off his bike and dashed his brains out, and I've dragged him to the emergency room, and I'm like, well, here's a little witticism. How about this?
Well, if you can't, what you should do is you should go down to the grocery store, tell them jokes, get a chicken from them.
That's a good idea.
Bring the chicken to the doctor. That's all my concerns.
It's an interesting idea. You pay your doctor in poultry, but if you have like a catastrophic illness, you are going to have to bring some side dishes. Mm-hmm.
Well, what it'll turn into is somebody will come up with like a poultry bank, an exchange, if you will, where you'll just have poultry vouchers.
Right.
Oh, collateralized poultry obligations.
Oh, no.
Goldman Sachs will corner the poultry.
Yeah. So you're saying paper slips that indicate units of poultry that are actually held elsewhere.
But you can do derivative swaps.
Yeah. Right.
Against, and people could pool their poultry.
And you can bet against the chicken living.
You put some
chicken
chickens in with the good
chicken. You know what's going to happen, though?
Yeah.
If we do that, this socialist president is going to take us off the poultry standard, and then we'd have rampant inflation.
True.
Yeah, we'd be trading in hamsters.
Exactly. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Aaron Holmgren from St. Olaf College in Minnesota.
Hey, St. Olaf College. Where's St. Olaf now?
In Northfield.
Oh, yeah, Northfield. There's a remarkable community there, Northfield. Carleton College is down there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, for heaven's sake.
We have some fans. We have some graduates. Well, welcome to our show, Aaron. You are going to play the game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. What is the topic, Carl?
It's complicated.
Dating? As you know, stressful, sometimes humiliating experience with all the primping, the manscaping, the restraining orders. I'm sorry, did I say too much? Thanks to computers, though, it's gotten even worse. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about modern technology messing with a single scene. Choose the true story. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. First up, let's hear from Paula Poundstone.
Unfortunately for some singles, the Google search has become a tool in the world of dating. Unflattering facts and photographs showing up on the internet are a modern-day reality, but not one likely to eliminate youthful indiscretion, which sets the stage for the success of Mr. Right Now, the company that alters your past and makes you quite a catch on the internet. For a fee, tech-savvy researchers skilled with Photoshop and Google search algorithms have literally transformed former juvenile delinquents into altar boys by doctoring damaging, caught red-handed security photos of a young lad lighting firecrackers. It never occurred to me that women would like it if I had played baseball with kids. And now that Mr. Right Now folks got their hands on that photo of me going after neighborhood kids on my front yard with a baseball bat, it appears that I have. The Mr. Right Now people work to place their clients' new information ahead of that of any old information that may come up on a search engine. It's not as unscrupulous as it sounds, claims company founder and president Gordon McKee. Is it really fair for a guy to be, in essence, blacklisted in the dating world by decade-old photographs of a barnyard fraternity prank, when with a little help from us, it could appear that he starred in a successful college production of Equus with really good sets?
Mr. Right Now, defeating those Google searches launched by prospective girlfriends. Your next story of connectivity compromising a love connection comes from PJ O'Rourke.
Technology and dating, it gets no worse than this. BlackBerry, to promote its new BlackBerry Pearl, has hired pretty actresses to hang out in bars and flirt. When a man gets interested, the actress pulls out her BlackBerry Pearl, invites the fellow to enter his phone number. She promises she'll call him, but she never calls him. The whole thing's just a scam to get the guy to fiddle around with the BlackBerry Pearl and decide that he wants one himself. And you know what's really cruel about this scam? I don't know how to put my phone number into a BlackBerry arthritic old fingers, confusing little icons, tiny touchpad numbers. Yeah, the pretty girl, you know, she wasn't going to call me, but I never even had hope that she was going to call me. I didn't have any hope. You know? What kind of world do we live in?
I'm just so sad.
I know. It's like, PJ, do we need to take a moment, or are you all right?
I'm all right. I'm all right.
Girls pretending to be interested in you, but they just want you to look at their new phone. Your last story of another technological wrinkle to love comes from Tom Baudet.
It seemed like such a good idea. Face it. Face recognition software bundled into a tiny little smartphone app linked to a network loaded with user reviews of the people you meet. Discreetly point your phone's camera lens down the bar at that sexy thing looking your way, and if he or she has dated someone in the network, you'll get instant reviews and recommendations. Psycho, in bold letters, might be a helpful tip before you send her that drink. Or he calls it Lil Mikey for a reason. Is information any girl can use. But then, like dating itself, things got weird. People started using it to seek revenge for broken hearts and rejections, said Face It developer Maria Ogden. I thought it could be a trip advisor for lovers. You know, try the Kobe beef burgers. They're great. But it's turned into a fatal attraction with iPhones.
All right, let's review all your choices. From PJ O'Rourke, women manning the bars, if you will, just to entice you by pretending to flirt with you to try out their new BlackBerry Pearl smartphones. From Paula Poundstone, a service that will quickly redo your results of your Google search to hide your embarrassments. And from Tom Baudet, a program that gets instant reviews of any prospective date simply by pointing your iPhone right at them. Which of these is the real story of technological dating?
I'm just going to have to go with the BlackBerry one.
You are. Is that the one that seems most realistic to you?
I guess.
All right. Your choice is PJ's story. Well, we actually spoke to a reporter who covered this story.
The whole goal was just to get the BlackBerry into their hands, and entering their phone number into the BlackBerry was the easiest way to do that.
That was Jacob Osterhout, features reporter for the New York Daily News, who broke the story about BlackBerry's stealth marketing campaign. You got it right. Very well done. You earned a point for PJ O'Rourke, and you have won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you so much for playing with us today.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Give me your number and let me call sometime.
And now the game where we treat respected people with very little respect. It's a surprise to them, but we call it Not My Job. What Ebert and Roper were to movies, or what Larry King is to ex-wives, Buster Olney is to baseball. He is a senior writer for ESPN Magazine, a regular on ESPN's Baseball Tonight, and author of the best-selling book, The Last Night of the Yankee Dynasty. We are delighted to have him join us. Buster Olney, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing great, Buster. Well, great to have you here. So we want to talk, obviously, about the season. It's just underway. The Red Sox and Cubs are already stinking, so all is right with the world. But have you were you one of those guys who were always interested in baseball? This is your passion?
Yeah, I was always interested in baseball, despite the fact that I came from a family where everyone else hated baseball. I grew up on a dairy farm in Vermont, and they were all interested in farming and had no interest in baseball. In fact, when I was 10 years old and played Little League for the first time, I already was a burgeoning nerd and would come back from my games and stand in the kitchen and recite for my mother all of the plays and every pitch and every inning. And that after about two games, my mother said to me, "Buster, you have tremendous potential to be very boring."
Congratulations, sir, for living up to that potential. So then this is a question for me, because I'm a big baseball fan, but you actually get to know these guys. You're around professional baseball all the time. Does being that close to it ruin it for you as a fan? Can you know too much?
Well, not really. You know, I love the games on a daily basis, but you do have you certain moments where it's not quite what you expected. You know, a few years ago, Red Sox and Yankees, remember they had that big fight during the playoffs, and Pedro Martinez threw Don Zimmer to the ground.
Oh, yeah. I just want to clarify for the audience. Pedro Martinez at the time was a 30-ish pitcher for the Red Sox. Don Zimmer was a 70-year-old man, a coach, kind of large and fat and bald, if I can be so bold. But go on.
So I ran down to the Yankees clubhouse to position myself to be the first reporter into the clubhouse because I wanted to be in the best possible position to talk to Don Zimmer after that game. And sure enough, I was the first guy through the door, raced over to Don Zimmer's locker, stood right there in front of the locker, and a wall of reporters came running in behind me. And even if I had wanted to move, I couldn't have. And so I was in the perfect position, and then I look over, and here comes Don Zimmer out of the shower. And he's got a towel on. And he gets in front of his locker, and he drops the towel with his backside toward me and bends over. And now, I've known Don Zimmer a long time, and I don't think he was trying to moon me, but he got the job done that day.
Yeah.
And that was probably the most memorable day of my time as a reporter.
I think I could never watch a baseball game again after that. You're known and respected for being a pretty fair reporter. You're not one of those sports writers who makes their bones by just, you know, telling the readers or viewers how awful some sports hero or may or may not be. Do you ever regret that? Do you ever really want to just rip into somebody?
yeah, certainly there are times you have your issues with some players, and they may say some things to you behind closed doors. But generally speaking, you just talk about how they're playing on the field.
What if these guys don't like what you write about them? I mean, do they let you know about it?
They do let you know about it. And part of my job when I covered the Baltimore Orioles actually was to get cussed out about 20 minutes every day by the owner of the Orioles at the time, the Peter Angelos. Who didn't like what was written in the Baltimore Sun a lot, so I'd call him up and I'd hold the phone about 3 feet away from my ear, and he would just wear himself out for 20 minutes.
And what would you write that would make him do that?
It wasn't me so much. It was some of my colleagues, and I was the one he talked to. So he would just yell at me, and then after about 20 minutes, he would say, I don't know why I'm yelling at you. You didn't write it, but that was just kind of his thing.
Why
didn't he talk to the people who wrote it?
Because he wasn't talking to them, but he was talking to me.
Can I ask you a question? Is there a point at which you've said everything that can be said about baseball?
Absolutely not. There's a new game, a new story every day.
Yeah.
Well,
it's not like my mother, Paula.
No, I don't find you boring at all, by the way. It's baseball I'm concerned about.
Whenever we hear people talking about baseball, though, they're always saying the same things. If a guy's hitting, they say, well, he's seeing the ball well. You know, well, if the pitcher's pitching, he's really executing his pitches. Or he's not executing his pitches. And we all
That's
nod and listen.
That's why I talk about Don Zimmer mooning people.
Exactly. It's more interesting.
But isn't there always the possibility of the miraculous thing? Like the Yankees turned a triple play this week. They haven't done it like in 40, 50 years.
That's exactly right. And every day you could see something you haven't seen before. Opening day, you know, the Braves rookie outfielder Jason Hayward, 20 years old, hits a ball 461 feet in his first at bat playing in his hometown. That's a pretty cool moment.
That's why we
watch, Paul. Yeah.
Oh!
It all comes clear. All comes clear for Paul.
I got to ask you, because we're in Chicago, what is with the Cubs? Because statistically, if you were to, like, throw dice, if there were, like, 30 times, eventually you'd come up with the Cubs and they'd win. And yet they haven't in 100 years. Can you explain this? Is, in fact, there a curse? Because I'm already with the supernatural at this point.
Well, I actually heard a story today that ESPN, a couple weeks ago, they had someone came through who was a fortune teller. And one of the news editors here walked up to the fortune teller and said, can you please find out if the curse is going to be taken away from the Cubs? And the fortune teller said, I've tried it. It can't happen.
Really? She didn't even have to check with the spirits. She just knew.
She said it was a lost cause. Forget it. And so it's been more than 100 years, and apparently it's going to be another 100 years.
One last question, and I say this as someone who loves baseball, talking to someone who really loves baseball. Do you ever, with all the work that you do, ever get up in the morning in the middle of the summer and say, you know, the last thing in the world I want to do is watch another baseball game?
No. Sadly,
really?
No. No, that's like my mom said, you know, tremendous potential to be very boring.
And there you go. Congratulations on living up to it. I'm sorry, that came out wrong. Well, Buster Olney, we're delighted to have you with us. Enough about that game. Let's play ours. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Reports of his death are not exaggerated at all.
Samuel Clemens, known as Mark Twain, died 100 years ago this week, inspiring many celebrations of his life and work. We're going to do our own by asking you three questions about the lesser-known aspects of his life. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Buster Olney playing for?
Buster is playing for Jess Muse of South Portland, Maine.
Ready to play?
I'm ready to go. Another New Englander.
There you go. All right, square up your bat. Hope you're seeing the ball well. Here is your first question. Mark Twain went to great lengths to sell his books, including which of these schemes? A, he dedicated one to John Smith, not because he knew or liked John Smith, but because he figured there were lots of them who would buy the book. B, he had an early edition of Tom Sawyer printed to look just like the Bible. Or C, the hardcover of Huckleberry Finn was sold as, quote, a story and a flotation device.
I'll guess A.
You're going to guess A. He dedicated it to John Smith? Yes, he did, in fact. It was the first published story, the celebrated jumping frog of Calaveras County. Very good. Here's your next question. Twain was an enthusiastic, if unsuccessful, businessman. He started a publishing house, which made a lot of money on President Grant's memoirs. But then he lost it all when he gambled the company on what failed blockbuster follow-up? Was it A, an enormous book of a new fad from Britain called Crossword Puzzles? B, an exhaustive biography of Pope Leo XII? Or C, a catalog of the insects of the American South?
Wow. I am going to go C.
You're going to go C, a catalog of the American Southern insect species. No, it was actually Leo XII. Apparently, nobody really cared about Pope Leo XII. Twain only sold 200 copies and went bankrupt. All right, this is very exciting. Bottom of the ninth. Here you go. Two outs. If you get this one right, you win. Twain loved technology. He was an inventor himself. Among his inventions was which of these? A, a new and improved kind of suspenders for pants. B, a cigar holder that holds and blends the smoke of two cigars at once. Or C, a fishing apparatus that involved small explosive charges.
I'm going to say C, given his time on the water.
You say fishing apparatus, like you throw in a little bomb with a reel attached to it or something like that. That's what you think?
Yeah.
No. Oh. It was the suspenders. I'm sorry. Yes.
A swing and a miss.
Yeah. There is no joy in Bristol.
I'm going to go watch a baseball game.
Yeah. That'll make you good. No, Twain patented a, quote, improvement in adjustable and detachable straps for garments to replace plain old suspenders. So, Carl, how did Buster Olney do?
Well, Buster needed two correct answers to win for Jess Muse. He had just one.
Okay, Buster, I'm going to turn the table on you a little bit. So now you're doing your post-game press conference, and we want to know why you lost. What happened out there, Buster?
I totally choked.
Yeah.
See, I was given advice by a pitcher named David Cone of the Yankees. He said, when you have a bad game, just say it. And then there's no other question that can be asked. So I just stunk up the joint.
Why do you think that was?
And how does it feel?
How does it feel?
Yeah, I'm a loser.
Well, Buster Olney is a senior writer for ESPN Magazine. He's a regular on ESPN's Baseball Tonight and the author of the best-selling book, The Last Night of the Yankee Dynasty, which is a wonderful title for a book, I have to say, as a Red Sox fan. Buster Olney, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Life is a ball game being played each day. Life is a ball game. Everybody can play.
In just a minute, Carl tells us how rhyme wasn't built in a day. It's our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Tom, the New York Society Library is cracking down on borrowers with overdue books, and they've released the name of its most egregious offender. Who was it?
I would say Bernie Carrick, but I don't think he's a public library guy. I'd say... Madoff, Bernie Madoff.
No, you might say this guy is the father of overdue library fines.
Founding father.
The founding father.
Oh, Thomas Jefferson.
No.
The library thing.
The father of?
The father of founding father. George Washington.
Yes, George Washington.
Okay, yeah. Okay. All right, there were several,
nice,
you know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Weinberg's working his way through them all.
I never thought of Washington as a big reader. He's more of the guy on the horse for me in my head, you know. Jefferson was the library guy.
Well, you don't have to read a lot to take one book out and not return it.
That's true. He was a reader, just a very slow one.
I find.
Don't actually have to read it all. Come to think of it.
Washington checked out two books from the New York Society Library in 1789 and has failed to return them. He racked up fines in those two centuries that, with inflation, add up to $300,000 or so. The library said that they would not be pursuing a payment since Washington has been dead for quite some time. In case you were wondering, the two books were Getting Yourself on Currency for Dummies and What to Expect When You're Expecting a Nation.
You know what? I've been on the waiting list for those.
Yeah. And now you know why you haven't gotten them.
Yeah, that's what's put off my secession. Wasn't sure what to expect.
Paula, this week the Supreme Court is trying a big case involving text messages, and it's exposed that the Supreme Court, for all its wisdom, does not know much about what?
Texting.
Exactly right.
I learned that in the sixth grade.
Yeah. The most telling moment came when Chief Justice Roberts asked a lawyer in front of him what the difference was, quote, between email and a pager. It's sad. He's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States.
He's the youngest one.
I know.
You mean you guys aren't following Justice Scalia on Twitter?
No, I'm not. And Roberts is the tech guy. He has to go help the other justices with the mimeograph machine. He's the only one who can do it.
Yeah. Without getting ink all over himself. Yeah.
No, the Supreme Court is famously late adopting of technology. Justice Roberts is known to write out his opinions in pen and paper. Ruth Bader Ginsburg still uses Friendster. And Clarence Thomas spurns all forms of communication technology, including email, instant messages, and saying words out loud.
I'm glad they're not texting.
I think it would be sad, because you know they'd be distracted.
Yeah.
As soon as you start, you can't stop. They'd be sitting there texting each other, oh, just listening to arguments. What are you doing? Tom, the Library of Congress is the repository of historic documents telling the story of our nation. While in some what see as quite a coup, the collection is going to be expanded to include what?
Text messages.
Close.
No. Yeah, close. Well, it's close to a text message.
It has the same character limit as text messages.
Oh, Twitter's.
Yes,
stuff.
The world's tweets.
Oh, even mine.
Every single one of the millions of 140 character messages will be preserved, and all tweets will be given equal weight, whether they come from President Obama or that Play-Doh eating 10-year-old down the street. In 1,000 years, then, civilization will look back and think that we, at the beginning of the 21st century, were a narcissistic society riven by civil war, torn in our allegiance to our two great leaders, Ashton Kutcher and Justin Bieber.
Since I knew that, because I read that thing about the Library of Congress, and since I learned that the Twitters were going to be in there, I've really tried to upgrade the quality of mine.
Really? Using bigger words, more high-minded thoughts?
Yeah.
Footnotes.
Yeah.
Footnotes with my Twitters.
Yeah. I never just say, like, I'm in the shower.
Now what do you say?
I'm bathing. It's better, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It's more literary. Yeah.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, and you can find out about our upcoming show in Seattle on June 3rd. Good tickets are still available. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Sarah McMahon from Lenoir, North Carolina.
Sarah from Lenoir, North Carolina?
Yeah.
What's going on in Lenoir?
Oh, not much.
Count yourself. All right, then.
Count yourself lucky.
It's a very small town.
And what do you do there?
I work as a biology teacher at the community college, and I'm a goat farmer.
Is goat farming a rewarding thing?
I love it.
Right.
It is a fantastic job.
What do you do with the goats once you have grown them?
We milk them to make cheese.
Goat They're milk cheese.
Good to eat, too.
It is. It's very healthy.
No, I mean the goats.
We try not to do that. We love our goats.
Aww.
Don't let PJ near your farm.
No.
Sarah, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Carl Castle right here is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on just two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to play?
Yes.
Here you go. Here's your first limerick.
The flat tone makes ladies rejoice. Like Clooney, I am their top choice. I don't change my pitch, and they start to twitch. There's power in my boring
voice.
Exactly right.
Yay.
According to the journal Archives of Sexual Behavior, men with flat, monotone voices have better luck with women than men with expressive voices. A steady voice indicates control and authority. Well, the changeable, flappy voice suggests you're flighty or nervous. The study falters, though, when it cites George Clooney and Clint Eastwood as examples of men whose monotone voices make them irresistible to women. George Clooney and Clint Eastwood are irresistible to women because they are George Clooney and Clint Eastwood. All right, here is your next limerick.
Ultraviolet rays I am scanning, and my next trip I'm already planning. The light from this bed goes straight to my head. I'm really addicted to
tanning.
Yes. Turns out men and women who use tanning beds don't just use them because they all want to look like John Boehner. Who wouldn't? But because tanning activates the same parts of the human brain that are triggered by drug addiction. The author of the Archives of Dermatology study says, quote, "This is not about appearance. It's for relaxation, to improve mood, or to socialize," unquote. This is sad. If the tanning salons start to close because of the tax and the health care bill, we'll have desperate addicts hurling themselves under the heat lamps at McDonald's.
Or they can just go outside.
No!
No, no, no. That won't work. There are no tanning beds outside. They're inside. What are you talking about?
I can't even believe you said that. Outside, I should say.
All right, very good. Here is your last limerick.
Harold Hill might have seemed a contrarian, but for love he knew whom to be querying. And back in the stacks, his lady attacks. She's a passionate gal, that.
Can we do that again?
You sure can.
Harold Hill might have seemed a contrarian, but for love he knew whom to be querying. And back in the stacks, his lady attacks. She's a passionate gal, that.
Back in the stacks, Harold Hill. Remember him? The Music Man? No? Well, you've already won. I'll give it to you. It's Librarian. Librarian.
Oh, my Lord.
This is our favorite story of the week. In 1992, the Wilson Library Bulletin, that's a professional librarian's journal, conducted a survey to determine how many librarians are sexy librarians. The survey was suppressed by people who were afraid of the truth, but it's finally come out. The survey found 20% of librarians said that they had, quote, done it in the stacks.
All right.
Yes. Oh, asked what Shakespearean title best described their first sexual encounter, 28% said Comedy of Errors, while for 22% it was Much Ado About Nothing. We wonder how many chose The Two Gentlemen of Verona. We're disappointed in that the survey did not measure the ratio of those who checked out bound periodicals to those who were bound periodically. And what percentage of the librarians regularly took off their glasses to shake their heads from side to side in slow motion? Carl, how did Sarah do in our quiz?
Sarah had two correct answers, Peter, so she wins our prize.
Yes.
Well done.
All right, Sarah.
Thank you so much for playing with us.
Thanks.
Simple little bookworm, buried underneath, is the sexiest librarian. Take off those glasses and let down your hair for me.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Tom Baudette has the lead, Peter, with 3 points. Paula Poundstone and P.J. O'Rourke are tied for second. Each has 2.
We have flipped a coin. P.J. has elected to go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. According to a poll from the Pew Research Center, 4 out of 5 Americans don't trust blank.
Anybody.
But especially the government.
The government, yes, the government. Yeah. The Coast Guard announced Thursday that the blank that exploded off the coast of Louisiana had sunk into the Gulf of Mexico.
The oil rig.
Right. Officials say that the response rate for this year's blank is just 1 point below the response rate in 2000.
Census.
Right. The Treasury Department unveiled its design for the new blank, which will include features in 3D.
$100 bill.
Right. The Capitol Police issued an urgent warning after the Senate Post Office received envelopes containing blank.
Oh, is it powder again?
No, it's atomic fireball jawbreakers.
I love those.
Oh, those can be dangerous.
After the creators were threatened over an episode showing the Prophet Muhammad in a bear suit, Comedy Central censored their broadcast of blank.
That sounds like South Park.
Right. Dorothy Height, an icon of the blank movement, died Tuesday at age 98.
Civil rights.
Absolutely. A farmer in Northern Ireland believes 6% of the world's energy needs can be met by blanking.
I didn't know potato was a verb.
No, by putting all the cows in the world on treadmills. Farmer William Taylor calls it the livestock power mill. Just put the world's 1.3 billion cows on treadmills, hook them up to a generator, and then get them to walk for 8 hours a day, which, as Taylor points out, cows love to do anyway. Trouble is the cows are bound to get bored with the treadmills and move on to jazzercise. Carl, how did PJ do in our quiz?
PJ had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and PJ has the lead.
All right, then. Paula, you are up next. Please fill in the blank. Tapes of Timothy McVeigh's confession were released on Monday, the 15th anniversary of the bombing in blank.
Oklahoma City.
Right. Fabrice Touré, the only employee named in the SEE's fraud lawsuit against blank, is scheduled to testify before Congress next week.
Goldman Sachs.
Right. A zoo in China has come under fire for allowing visitors to blank.
Ride on tigers.
Yes. Appearing as a guest on the TV show The View, blank said he hadn't known the mic would pick up his comment about the passage of the health care bill.
Who would make a comment about the passage of the health care bill? Marcus Welby, I don't know.
No, it was Joe Biden. Joe Biden. Big effing deal, remember? On Monday, Robert Kiprono Cheruiyot of Kenya won this year's blank.
Boston Marathon.
Right. A student field trip in Missouri to visit the State Highway Patrol took a bad turn when a SWAT team member blanked.
Surrounded them.
Set off a flash grenade to surprise them. What better way to welcome a group of 27 high school kids than with an exploding flash bomb? The kids were listening to a presentation when a SWAT team member secretly rolled the non-lethal flashbang grenade under their seats, and boom! The students were not amused, and neither was the evening janitorial staff, forced to deal with the aftermath. As one student put it, that's what we do when someone scares the bleep out of us. Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 10 points. But PJ has the lead still with 14 points.
Tom, it's up to you. It's up to you.
How many does Tom need to win?
6 correct answers.
All right, Tom. Fill
tall order.
Here we go. This is for the game. Tom, fill in the blank. Environmental celebrations across the country on Thursday marked the 40th anniversary of blank.
Earth Day.
Right. As it recalled still more cars, blank confirmed it will pay a $16.4 million fine to the U.S. government.
Toyota.
Right. To help pass new financial regulations, President Obama asked for help from executives on blank.
Wall Street.
Right. Saying they failed to protect children from abuse, an Illinois man filed a federal lawsuit against the blank and other officials.
The Pope.
Exactly right. A 20-year-old British woman convicted of, quote, drink-related antisocial behavior has been blanked.
Has been. Who in the hell knows? Eaten by a 12-foot boa constrictor.
Has been banned from every bar in England. Because she was accidentally given the original instead of a copy, Sandra Bullock agreed to return her blank award.
Her Oscar award.
No, her Razzie award.
Oh.
A man in Britain has been banned from driving for 3 years after he was pulled over for blanking.
Partying with the woman who was banned from every bar in the country.
For driving a toy Barbie car while drunk.
I was going to say that.
Oh, man.
Bad enough to be sitting in your car for all the world to see while the police officer writes you a ticket.
Oh, and they're pink, too.
Yeah, they're really pink, they're small, they're electric. Yeah. He kind of crammed himself in, and he's driving down the road at 4 miles an hour, swerving. Yeah.
Can't have been a big man.
No. He says, actually, he had to do some sort of contortion to get himself in, and then it was hopeless to get himself out.
Yeah.
Carl, did Tom do well enough to win?
Tom needed at least 6 correct answers. He had just 4. So with 14 points, P.J. O'Rourke is this week's champion.
Well done, P.J.
Well done, sir.
Has that ever happened before?
I don't know. It might not
have. Yeah, I think that once in the course of 10 years.
I remember it happened once, but only because the Supreme Court made a decision in your favor. And so it doesn't really count.
It did. After the Florida Secretary of State intervened.
Yeah, exactly. In just a minute, now that we've had the new iPhone debacle, we're going to ask our panelists to predict the next important thing that will be left in a bar. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Mini, featuring the 37-mile-per-gallon Mini Cooper with go-kart handling. Learn more at miniusa.com/info. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Christine Fiedler. Our web guru, Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next thing left behind in a bar? PJ O'Rourke.
Me.
Paula Poundstone.
The brand new, not yet released ShamWow.
Ooh. And Tom Baudet.
The Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback.
And if anybody forgets any of those down at the pub panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, PJ O'Rourke, and Paula Poundstone. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.